accession number 33130, rail 4.
Captain Kett, tape 2, side B.
Pardon?
You were just telling me that you were advised in the air raid at Devonport to take the men ashore.
Yes, I went ashore and we started to put out a fire in the oxygen tent. And we worked putting out fires, kicking in sentries over the side and so on. And it was really quite a bad air raid, but it stopped about 4 o'clock. If you remember, I can't remember the date, but it was the time when the whole of the dockyard and 4th Street were completely wiped out. We went back on board and I said to the captain, could I nip ashore and see if my girlfriend and her family are all right? And he said, look, we're sailing at 8 o'clock in the morning. I cannot give you permission to go, but whatever you do, make sure you're back on board before we sail, which was as good as saying, well, it's up to you.
Pretty decent chap then.
So I rushed ashore, went to Doris and found them all sitting in their air raid shelter. Their house had been bombed, not too badly. On the way, I had to walk, and 4th Street was a devastation, and people were coming out of their houses, and because I was in uniform, they said, would it be all right to leave our what we've salvaged in the road? So I said, yes, it would be perfectly all right. I only hope it was. And so I eventually got them and to her house, and they were all still sitting in the air raid shelter. Although the father was on patrol as an air raid warden, I didn't know, my face was apparently all black with soot, but I didn't know that. Anyway, I made them a cup of tea and sat with them for a while, and they assured them that it was all right, and went back to the ship, and we sailed the next day.
A lot of people I've spoken to who were in the forces said that they felt that the people at home had gone through far more than they had.
Absolutely.
In many ways.
It was far more worrying sitting in an air raid shelter, of all things. It was the most dangerous place to sit. And so the air, it was nice having something to do during the airport. Mm. To sit in a shelter, it must be terrible. Mm. And I told you when I was transferred from Oberon to Dundee to Clyde, she was on patrol when I got there, so they let me go home for 4 days. And when I arrived in London, we had an air raid as we came across the Forth Bridge. That didn't worry me. When we got to London, I came out at King's Cross Paddington, Liverpool Street, and there was an air raid. And I said to somebody, what does one do? And he said, you don't do anything, mate. You can either go down in the underground if you like, or if not, if the bomb hasn't hit you, it's hit somebody else and you just carry on. And I said, well, I want to get to Blackheath. And he said, well, you won't be able to do that. All the roads are bombed. And so I got a taxi. I said to the taxi driver, could you take me to Blackheath? And in actual fact, he took me and we followed a 47 bus the whole way to Blackheath. I was a bit furious, but never mind. And when I went into my house, I was surprised to find it completely empty. A bomb had gone through the roof and the roof was shattered. I couldn't find anyone, so I went into the garden where my father had dug a large air raid shelter, and there were 3 ladies in there, and they said, who are you? And I told them, well, this is my father's house. And they told me my mother had been evacuated to Weston-super-Mare, and my father was at his business, of course. And then I stayed in with them for 2 days, sleeping in the air raid shelter. And as I say, that's where you get to realise it's quite dangerous. Mm.
You got to see your father at that time?
Yes, my father came home, of course. And then while I was there, in actual fact, I remember that now. It's odd how you remember these things. The next night, we had an air raid, and the house next door, it was a detached house, just 2, and it was on fire. So my father and I and the man across the road came, and we ran up and downstairs with buckets of water and put the fire out. So, yes, we had several raids while I was there. I spent my morning, my days, when he was at work, shoveling more earth on top, but it was really a silly thing to do, but it passed the time for me. And then I went back to Clyde, and that's another beginning of the next story.
So your parents, were they anxious about you being in submarines? I know you said you didn't actually tell them at one point.
I didn't tell them that I was in submarines.
What, never?
No, I didn't tell them at all, but my sister found out. Someone told her that Clyde had been sunk, and she knew I was in Clyde, but I didn't tell it was a submarine. Mm. And therefore she wrote to the Admiralty and asked them what sort of ship, and that's how they got to know. I never told them. It was reckoned to be a very dangerous job, and there's no point in worrying them, was it?
Yeah. So obviously communications between you all were a bit limited. You didn't know your mum had gone to Weston-super-Mare and...
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
No.
They weren't emails and...
No. Did you write home regularly?
Mobile phones and that. Well, I used to write, yes. But again, it was very heavily censored.
Mm.
You could never say where you were or what you were doing. So writing letters was not terribly informative. They used to write to me, I suppose, but you very rarely got them. I mean, I would be in Jib one day, Malta the next, Beirut the next. You didn't get a lot of home news.
Mm.
And in submarines, we were not allowed or encouraged to take any letters or anything that could identify you or where you came from or where you'd come from.
So while you were at Devonport, you were there when the Surkov was... When the Surkov, the French submarine...
Yes.
Was
we were refitting Clyde.
Yes.
And Surkov and the other two German French submarines had come in.
Mm.
And that's when Dunkley from the Thames, oddly enough, he was captain of the Thames, not Clyde. He was sent on board with two other men, I'll be reading it, to try and say to them, we're not going to allow the submarine to fall into the German hands. You can either come in with us or we'll send you back to France, but the submarines are staying here. And some of them said, yes, we would come and work with you. And somebody just shot him as he walked up the hatch. I didn't have a lot to do with Surkov then. I think she was sailed away. But the other two, as I told you, Minerve and another one, did cause quite a bit of trouble, and the police would come to us in the submarine office and ask us to go and try and sort them out. And when I went with the captain or somebody, the French had different loyalties. One of them turned over his belt and said, look, I'm a royalist, and the other one was a Vichyist or Pétain. And that was the French, seemed to me, I hated working with them. They didn't seem quite to know which side they were on or what they were fighting for.
Mm.
I had quite a bit of experience with another French submarine. When I'd got command, Ultimatum took a French submarine called Curie, a similar U-boat, we'd given it to them, which we sailed together to the Mediterranean. I got on quite well with him eventually, but they were harder people to work with. To work with the Dutch submarines was easy. To work with the Polish submarines and the Norwegian submarines was an absolute delight. And once I was engaged to work with a Russian submarine, and that was an absolute nightmare. They would not obey any instructions whatsoever. They were told to follow me through the boom when the boom opened in the Clyde and proceed at 10 knots. And they just went through on their own and disappeared out of the blue. And I sent a signal to Captain S and said, the submarine's gone on its own, I can't recall it. And he said, well, it's up to them. They did. We did rendezvous and I brought them back again, but working with Russians and French were not easy. You better cut that out.
Not at all. It's all part of it. So some of the time you were stationed in Gibraltar for quite a while, weren't you?
Yes. In Clyde we were mostly in Gibraltar because she was quite big.
What was the atmosphere like there? I mean, did you have raids or was it like there wasn't a war on? Or
we did have one or two raids, but they were really not severe. It was just a token raid, really. We did think, and an admiral came out and told us, we did think maybe the Spaniards would go in with the Germans and we would be invaded. And he came out and said, whatever happens to Britain, whether it's invaded and captured, the Royal Navy will never surrender, and the submarine service will never surrender. And we were told we would then go from Gib to Freetown, where we would be based, and we would continue the war and to the end. We did have a couple of air raids while I was there, but they were not really serious.
You told me you were there when Eagle was sunk.
Yes, well, they were then trying to get convoys to Malta. Ark Royal used to bring the aircraft from Britain, and Eagle was expendable, and they used to berth stern first and push their planes from one to the other, and then Eagle joined a convoy and sailed for Malta, and it was in one of those convoys that she was sunk. And of course, as you know, most of the convoys were sunk, and so they couldn't get any petrol or food to Malta.
So
and
you said that's why
they said investigate, yes, doing it in the submarine.
Yes.
And because Clyde was the largest submarine, she was the first one to do it.
Yes.
And luckily, by this time, I was first lieutenant. Well, loading petrol and stores to me was up my street.
Yes, yes, I think you were very lucky there, weren't you?
Well, yes.
You've been quite fortunate, really, most of your career, haven't you?
I've been very fortunate indeed.
As you say,
life.
It is a very, very dangerous way to go along, isn't it? So, at what point did you and Doris decide to get married?
I think at the end of the Clyde refit, which, yes, I said it took about 2 months.
Yeah.
We had both, obviously, we wanted to be together, and I think that's when I said, well, you know, if I survive the Mediterranean, and then Doris said, well, if I survive air raids, we would like to get married, and she said yes. So we became engaged. I went and bought her, and then I went to her house in the good old days to see her father. And I said, I would like to get engaged to your daughter. And he said, surprise, surprise. So he said, we had explained to one another that A, I might not come back. And even if I do survive the war, the only thing I know about is the sea. So he said, you seem to have done your best to put her off, but you don't seem to succeed. And I said, well, we really do feel we love one another, and I'll look after her, and which we did. Anyway, he was a lovely man. I got on very well with him.
So she stayed at home with her parents, obviously, and carried on with her job.
After we were married.
No, I meant prior to you.
Oh, no,
yes.
No, I never stayed in the house or anything.
No.
Crikey, I was refitting the boat. But Doris, you see, was in the dockyard, and
yes,
she was an expense officer, so she knew what Clyde was doing.
Yes.
So when I rang her up and said, I'm backing Clyde, she said, I know, you're going to be here for a couple of months. You're having two stern torpedoes fitted. She knew more about the boat than I did. And I told you, her father was a senior draftsman in Devonport Dockyard.
Yes, yes.
Pretty high up person. And I took him round Clyde ultimatum when I got command, and showed him all round the boat, explained every rivet, every lever. And at the end of it, he said, you certainly know your stuff. In actual fact, I designed this submarine.
Gosh.
But he hadn't told me that before, you see. And, we got on extremely well. And when the war ended, he and I used to go away together, and people thought we were brothers, but they didn't think he was my father-in-law.
No.
So and I worked with them right to their end.
So when you did survive the Med and everything, you came back and you and Doris were married from Devonport?
Well, I came in from Malta, and we berthed alongside the Devon ship. And as I went up on a Thursday, as I went up the gangway, the commander met me at the top, and he said, you're flying home tomorrow to do your CO's course. So I mentally sent a cable to Doris to say, coming home on Saturday, suggest we get married. I'm starting the course on a Sunday. And that's exactly what we did. How they arranged it, I'll never know. I never bought a wedding ring or anything. I did nothing to it at all. But I arrived, the flight home was delayed because of bad weather. And we eventually came home in a Wellington bomber. I sat on the main beam. And we arrived, we were diverted from where we were supposed to go. We went to Redruth in Cornwall. The next day I had to take Admiralty signals up to London. That was on a Friday. I picked up my mother and father and we all went back to Plymouth that evening, and I stayed in the Continental Hotel. And the next morning we were married in a church, and they had arranged in the Royal Hotel, I think. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Quite a lovely reception. And Admiral Myers, he was quite a distinguished submariner, came. My best man was the First Lieutenant of Truculent. And then Doris and I set off at 3 o'clock in the afternoon about by train to Southsea, where we stayed in the Queen's Hotel for one night. And the next morning I went over and joined the submarine service. As she always said, we never had a honeymoon, but 64 years later we managed to still be together. So it was really quite extraordinary.
So after you'd gone off again, did she go back to live with Mum and Dad? Or did you have the home together?
After the CO's course, I was given command of a submarine in Scotland.
Mm.
And because... And when we finished the course, and the commander said, if you all go down and have a coffee, Captain S will be sending each one of you to tell you whether you passed or failed. And to my horror, they came down to me and said, oh, Ket, will you go up and see Captain S immediately? And everyone said, oh, what a bloody shame. You're nice. He's obviously failed. And I went up there, and he said to me, look, there's no time to spare. Congratulations, you've been given command of P-555, an ex-American submarine. Her CO has got to fly out to the Cairo tonight or tomorrow. You're to take over as quickly as you can. So within half an hour of passing the course, I was in command of the submarine, which was unfortunate because everyone else was given a fortnight's leave.
Mm.
And here I'd been married, seen my wife one night only, and I said to the commander, well, it's not really fair, this. I thought at least I haven't had any leave since the war began. This was 1942. And I'd been married for one night. He said, well, the point was we wanted you in this particular boat. It was an ex-American that they'd lent us.
Oh, yes, you said.
And so I was then sent up to Tobermory, and although that was a defended area, they did allow Doris to come up and stay in the hotel. So I went to sea 4 days at a time. When I came home, we would be together, and it was quite wonderful, actually.
Mm.
For her, it was fantastic.
Mm.
She led the lady's life for the first 2 or 3 years of her married life. So that was marvellous.
So you had two daughters, and you did say that you were away when your first daughter was born.
Yes, well, I went out to the Med with ultimatum, and I arrived in Gib on September the 23rd, I think, and Anna was born on that day. So I got a cable when I arrived in Gib. The first thing they said to me, you've had a daughter. And the engineer officer had a son, George Gay, so he became proxy godfather to Anna, and I became proxy godfather to his son.
Did you get a chance to wet the baby's heads? Did you get ashore and have a drink? A gin?
I think we were far too serious to do anything silly like that.
Mm.
No, we just said, good show, let's get on with it.
British Reserve.
You know, submarine wasn't... You keep on having... Did you go ashore in Portside? Did you... It wasn't like that.
No.
We were very dedicated to what we were doing.
Mm.
And after you had been on patrol, the submarine had to be refitted and restored. And when we were loading cargo for Malta, well, you were so busy, you very rarely had time to play. They did encourage us to go quite ashore in the daytime and play hockey
or fresh football
because the doctors realised that that's what we needed.
Vitamin D deficiency.
And I admit we did probably drink quite a lot until the captain has said, you'll be leaving for patrol in 2 days' time, and then we cut it out completely because we were told and we knew that drink and eyesight and reactions don't mix. and your life depends on your eyesight, and so there was never any drinking at sea in the submarine. Even if we sank anything, we never celebrated.
You didn't have a rum tot or anything like that, like the Navy?
The crew
ships.
Did, but
yeah.
Not the officers.
Mm.
And we did have gin on board, and we had whiskey, I suppose, I can't remember. And we would drink it in port, excessively. But, of course, we were back in port again.
Yes.
And then another boat's officers would come down, and you'd have parties all night long. But at sea, never. We sank a U-boat, but we never celebrated. So we never thought of wetting the baby's head.
Can you tell me something about sinking the U-boat?
Pardon?
Can you tell me something about sinking the U-boat, the action?
Well, I was on patrol off Toulon. We used to patrol about a mile and a half off for a fortnight at a time. And I received a signal from the Admiralty to say that a U-boat had been sighted steering west at 10 knots or 12 knots or something. And that was it. Well, it seemed obvious that she was returning and would be coming into Toulon. So I had to retire to sea to charge the battery, and then we proceeded into the entrance of Toulon, and we arrived about just before dawn, and the first thing, before we could even put the periscope up, the ASDIC operator reported loud, sounds like a submarine, hydrophone noise on, and so I put the periscope up, and there was a German submarine, and they were all lined up on deck ready to go into port. And we only, unfortunately, we'd already fired four torpedoes at something else, and we only had three effective torpedoes, so I could only fire three torpedoes at her. And she was first of all, she was reported by the Admiralty as probably sunk. And then it was later confirmed that it was new 541, I think. And immediately we had fired our torpedoes and heard the explosion. I looked and saw a big cloud of black smoke. And immediately destroyers came out from Toulon, and aircraft, a Dornier flying boat, came out from Toulon and started to drop depth charges.
So you went...
But we went down to 100 feet, and although we were shaken up, we weren't damaged at all. I had been damaged by depth charges, I told you.
Yes.
We lost our hydroplanes on one occasion.
Yes, a very scary experience, I should think. Pardon? A very scary experience, it sounded like.
Well, it was for me. It was the first time I had dived the submarine on my own, because it was an emergency, and we were sitting on the bottom, and then there was this almighty explosion. And the lights went out, and we had a little fire only in our pipe. And then we checked everything, and everything seemed to be working. So when darkness came, we surfaced and went alongside, checked everything again. Everything appeared to be working. And then we finished discharging, and we sailed, and we dived. And, you know, the trim problem was enormous, because we had discharged about 15,000 tons of... 1,500 tons of cargo and petrol. Now I've got to retrim it with water. So when we dived, we went completely out of control, and we went roaring down. We blew main ballast and came up again. And the captain said, "You made a mess of the trim." And I said, "I don't think so." And so, all right, we dive again and out of control again. And because the after hydroplanes, when you dive, you put the thing like that, so it lifts the stern up and the bow goes down. But these were no longer in control. So when we dive, they went harder dive and we went down. And when we surfaced, they went harder rise and we came up like a cork. We were going up and down. And we did it for five or six times, maybe more actually. But in the end, the captain said to me, "Take her down and put her on the bottom." Well, we'd been sailing now I thought we were going to go down forever. I really did.
Mm.
And so did the coxswain. I thought we were just giving up. Because in the end, by the time we broke surface, we were being machine gunned by a German aircraft. Of course, they didn't have any bombs. So we went down and sat on the bottom at 190 feet. And we all quietly had to go to sleep. And the next day, and the when he said take her down and sit her on the bottom, the outside ERA who looked after the air said, well, it's just as well, so of course we've only got enough air to surface once more. And the LTO who looked after the battery said, doesn't matter about the air, the battery's almost flat because we've been going up and down. So we were worrying how we're going to surface and what we're going to do. We eventually got up after dark and went into Malta, and then we put on Davis escape apparatus and went over the side, and we found that the shaft had broken, so the planes were just flapping up and down. The shaft itself was turning, the ammeter was showing it was working, and it wasn't. So we lashed it amidships like that with wires over the hull, and then we sailed back to Gib. It took 11 days to come back because we couldn't go very fast, only about a knot at a time.
Gosh. Yeah. So did you have escape hatches and at certain depths, or was that a fallacy?
The submarines were all fitted and we were all trained in escape. But because we had lost one or two submarines and they'd been able to report that the reason for them sinking was when they were depth charged, the hatch lifted and the water went in. So we had instructions from the Admiralty to put a strum back over the hatch. So after the first year or so of war, we had no escape at all. The crew didn't like it, but the officers did, especially the COs, because if you sink a submarine and you're responsible for trying to get people out, it's a hell of a responsibility, and it's something you don't look forward to ever having to do. So when we knew we couldn't do it, it was a relief off most of our minds. And in the med, you go down so deep, it wouldn't have come into it.
So at night, you would normally operationally be on the surface to recharge your batteries?
Yes, after dark we then surfaced to charge the batteries, and usually then we retired from being off the port because you make a noise with the engine. So we would retire about 10 miles off surface and then charge like mad the engine, and then go back and dive just before dawn. Again, at night was just as hard work as the daytime. Well, it was harder actually. It was great relief to dive in the daytime instead of being on the surface at night, when you could be surprised by e-boats, destroyers, aircraft, a lot. I was bombed by an aircraft. And anyway,
what happened? So it just came over and saw you, and the aircraft just came over and saw you and just took a chance and dropped.
Well,
some.
It was actually a British aircraft.
Oh, a bit worrying.
Yes, it was a Wellington. Uh-huh. And it, we heard it coming and we dived and they dropped a bomb, but it didn't do any harm. And then when we surfaced about half an hour later, we got a signal from Admiralty to say a U-boat has been sighted in your area going north at 16 knots. Well, I knew that it was me going south at about 5 knots, 10 knots. And we had an inquiry when we got to Gib, and the Wellington, he was a squadron leader, he was in charge, and they were found to be wrong, that we were in a bombing restriction area and they shouldn't really have attacked us. Anyway, we were exonerated, it was nothing to do with us. So I invited him down into the boardroom and we were having a gin together, and he said, you know, I'm sorry about this. And I said, didn't worry us at all. He said, well, I've been made to look a bit of a fool. He said, you wouldn't like to come up and do a patrol with me, would you? So I said, yeah, I would love it, but I don't suppose I'll get permission. But fortunately, they gave me permission. So 2 days later, kitted all out as a proper airman and with intercom, and I went to the preview orders, and we took off and we did a 12-hour flight over the bay looking for U-boats. And my job was to look down, and if I saw one, if we had seen one, I would be able to say, no, don't, it's British or it's German, and the course is north, not south, and so on. In actual fact, we went down, we had a Lee searchlight, and when we saw a target on with radar, they would switch on the light and shine it on the, and we had about a few seconds, actually, to decide whether it was enemy or not. We saw lots of vessels, well, five or six, and they were mostly Spanish trawlers or merchant vessels. Mm. And eventually, after the long flight, he said to me, "Would you have liked to see the submarine?" And I said, "Yes, of course I would." So he said, "Well, there's one in Finisterre that we've been told to look at. She's been damaged, and we are unofficially told to go and keep an eye on her to see if she's ever going to come out to sea again." He said, "They will put up a few searchlights. They will also put up a little bit of ACAC fire, but the Spaniards are not trying. Yes, we're working together in a way. They work with the Germans and they work with us." And so we flew over and we shone the light, and there was the German submarine, obviously out of commission. And then we came back. It was quite interesting.
Were you grateful you weren't in the RAF then?
Pardon?
Were you grateful you hadn't joined the RAF then?
Well, I don't think I'd ever thought of it then. Subsequently, I mean, I would love to learn to fly. I gather from what they all tell me, it's pretty boring, actually.
Mm.
And they fly on instruments, but no, I never regretted what I did.
From the air, it must be very difficult for them to work out between a British and a
yes,
German
of course.
Submarine, because there can't be that much difference from what you can see.
They know their position pretty accurately.
Yeah.
And we were given a plumbing restriction area, which was 10 miles.